Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series in the book of the Song of Solomon with the courtship. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. The book, The Song of Solomon, was written in the form of a drama in five acts. And we've seen that it tells a story about a love triangle between a country girl, her country boy lover to whom she is betrothed, and Solomon, who tries to steal her away from her beloved. In this book, we see an example of the kind of love and loyalty that we should have toward God, and of the kind of love that He has for us. The last time, we saw that Solomon had seen the country girl while she was quite innocently in a garden. He had fallen for her and had taken her into his train, more or less by force, as he was heading back for Jerusalem. Her shepherd, betrothed, hears of what has happened to her, and he follows Solomon's caravan. And somehow he attains an interview with her. And during that interview, she swears her loyalty to him in spite of Solomon's advances. And they praise each other, and that's where we were, finishing Act 1 of this drama in Song of Solomon chapter 2 and verse 5. She says, "Sustain me with cakes of raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am lovesick." So it seems that the interview with her and her beloved shepherd is over. And he has just left. And now this is a comment she makes to the court ladies, who Solomon is assigned to watch over her. She is feeling faint. She's feeling woozy. She says, "I need cakes of raisins. I need to be refreshed with apples," or the Hebrew might possibly mean oranges, as I said last time. Of course, we talk about knowing the difference between apples and oranges. Well, we don't necessarily know that when it comes to ancient Hebrew words, but whatever she wants, grape cakes or apples or oranges, whatever, to help her, to refresh her. And perhaps she's feeling somewhat sick to her stomach. You know, that's maybe a malady of young teenagers in love, is that they feel so in love they can barely eat. Their stomach feels sick. So she says, "I need some help for my digestive system here. I'm so in love. I'm so sick with love. So give me cakes of raisins and apples." Verse 6, "His left hand is under my head, and his right hand embraces me." So she imagines resting in his embrace. That'll calm her down. Then verse 7, "I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the does of the field, do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases." So this is apparently spoken to the court ladies. And as I said last time, I think some of these court ladies were kind of on her side and trying to encourage her with her love for her shepherd. And some of them were on Solomon's side. They're trying to encourage her to forget that silly shepherd boy. And what can he give you? Some country bumpkin home where here you could marry the king. You could have fancy dresses and you could have jewelry and you could live in a palace. Sure, you'd have tons of other wives you'd have to share them with, but you could be a princess. You could be a queen. Well, she urges these court ladies not to try to excite her passions for Solomon. And she charges these daughters of Jerusalem, these Jerusalem court ladies, by the gazelles and the does of the field. So by these antelope and deer creature. Of course, these would be the Israel versions, not the versions we have in the United States. But she charges them by those not to stir up or awaken love until it pleases, or until she pleases. She says, "My love, don't try to awaken my love for Solomon. Don't awaken love till love pleases to be wakened." And of course, for her, it pleased to be wakened with her shepherd boy, not with Solomon. Well, that ends that scene, and that ends Act 1 of this drama, of this play that is the Song of Solomon. And now we come to Act 2, and we're beginning Act 2 in Song of Solomon chapter 2 and verse 8. And I call this Love in the Springtime. And it seems that what's going on here is that she is telling a story. Telling it perhaps to these court ladies, trying to convince them of her great love for her shepherd boy. So it's kind of a flashback to something that probably happened the previous spring. I don't know for sure what time of year it is at this point, but this happened probably the previous spring, and it's trying to illustrate how much she loves her shepherd. So she says in verse 8, "The voice of my beloved, behold, he comes, leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills." So this is going on probably, like I said, this past spring. She is in her house, and she hears her beloved's voice outside, and she looks, and here he comes. He's coming across the mountains, across the hills. And she describes him like a mountain goat, leaping on the mountains and skipping on the hills. Now, I suppose if we really saw him, we would see him just a normal boy kind of running along or maybe jumping over things that are in his way. But he's just coming along like a normal young man. He's not leaping and bouncing around like a mountain goat or like some crazy fool. But I think in her love-colored glasses, she sees him like this graceful, beautiful mountain goat coming, leaping, dashing towards her. So she is seeing him through very romantic glasses as he is coming to see her. Verse 9, my beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, he stands behind our wall. He is looking through the windows, gazing through the lattice. So she describes him like a gazelle or a young deer, this country girl, and he reminds her of these most beautiful creatures that she's used to seeing out in the country, an antelope or a young deer. And then he's there. She is still in the house, like I said. So he is standing by their wall, the wall of their house, and he is looking through the windows. He's trying to peer through the lattice. He's trying to get a look at her. He's trying to glimpse her. He knows, he figures she's in the house, and he's trying to catch a glimpse of her looking through the lattice of the windows. Verse 10, my beloved spoke and said to me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. So she is still in the house. I think she's kind of hiding there. Maybe she's feeling a little bit embarrassed. Here is her young man, her betrothed shepherd boy, but he comes racing up to the house and he's peering in the windows and he's shouting for her. She's feeling a little shy maybe, or maybe she's playing a little bit hard to get. But he calls out to her. He says, rise up, which means go into action. My love, my fair, my beautiful one. And come away. He wants her to come out of the house and come away with him. He wants to spend the day with her. We would put it, he's asking her on a date. But of course, this is a date for a betrothed couple. They're legally bound together. They're destined to be married. He wants her to spend the day with him. Verse 11, for lo, the winter is past. The rain is over and gone. So they have been separated for a time by the winter rains. And as I've said before, apparently they lived in separate towns. She lived in Shulam. He lived in another town, maybe nearby, but far enough that when the winter came and the cold winter rains came, it separated them. He couldn't come and see her during that time of year. Now, in the place in the world where I live, in Minnesota, the winter is all about snow and all about terribly cold weather. But not so in Israel. In Israel, the coldest they would get in the winter was probably around 40 degrees Fahrenheit. And winter was the rainy season, so you'd have lots of cold rain. Well, I'll tell you what, you're out and you get soaked by cold rain. That is unpleasant. A cold rain in the upper 30s or lower 40s could be worse than a snow around 31, 30 degrees. I mean, the snow, it doesn't soak you down. You don't get as cold. So the cold winter rains could separate them. But snow would be very rare in winter in Israel. I think in Jerusalem they say it snows maybe once every 100 years. So snow is very rare in Israel. Generally, the winter is the rainy season, but cold rains were enough to separate them. They haven't seen each other since the last fall. So he says that the winter rains that separated us, they're all done. Now we can be together again. Verse 12, the flowers appear on the earth. The time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. So there's no doubt about it. She's being shy and hiding in the house, or like I said, trying to play hard to get, and he's trying to coax her out, coax her to come out and come away with him. So he says to her, the flowers have appeared on the earth. See, he knows his young lady. He knows she's a country girl through and through. He knows she loves the flowers. So he says, if you'll come with me and we'll go out and we'll see the flowers. You love the flowers, right? And the birds are singing. This country girl, she loves the animals. She loves these animals of nature. So he says, you can come and hear the singing birds and the voice of the turtle dove. You can hear the turtle dove. They've migrated back to the land from their winter homes. So he says, you can come and hear the turtle doves. Verse 13, the fig tree puts forth her green figs, and the vines with the tender grapes give a good smell. Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. So he says, the figs have come forth, the green figs, they're ripening on the fig trees. Now, we wouldn't think of any crops at the point of ripening in the early spring. But like I said, in Israel, where it doesn't get below freezing generally in the winter, there are a lot of winter crops, crops that grow during the wet, rainy season of the winter, and then would actually ripen and bear in the springtime. You'd have winter crops and summer crops. And so it seems that the figs are already out and are ripening on the trees in the spring. And the grapes, the vines with the tender grapes, this probably means the grape blossoms. So the grape blossoms are out. And they're sending forth a lovely smell. The smells of spring, the grape vines budding. And so he says, come and see these things. You'll love seeing the green figs. You'll love seeing the grape blossoms giving their smell. You love these things, so come and see them with me. So then he says, rise up, go into action. My love, my fair, my beautiful one. And come away, come with me. Verse 14. O my dove in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the cliff, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Well, it seems this whole time he's been trying to catch a glimpse of her as he's peering through the window through the lattice. And it seems he finally does. Either he finally picks her out or maybe she purposely kind of moves out a little bit so he can see her. And he finally spots her. And he's all excited that he spotted her. Oh, my dove in the clefts of the rock. So he says, you're like a dove hiding in the clefts of the rock, a shy dove hiding in the clefts, in the secret places of the cliff. And the old King James translated that the secret places of the stairs. So maybe she's hiding behind a stairway or maybe kind of around a corner where you can barely see her. So he compares her to this dove hiding in a crack in the rock. So he says, let me see your face. He says, come out where I can see your whole face, not just catch a glimpse of you. And let me hear your voice. I want to hear you speak to me. He says, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. He says, I want to hear your sweet voice. I want to see your beautiful face. Come out to me. Well, my guess is at this point, she's pretty much convinced. Like I said, whether she was shy, her crazy lover comes running and leaping up to her house, shouting in the window for her to come out to him. She's maybe a little bit embarrassed, playing a little bit hard to get, but now she's convinced she's going to come out to him. But then her brothers step in, or like we said, they might have been her half-brothers, might have been her full brothers, but anyway, her brothers appear to be in charge of the family. Of course, her father would have been if he was alive, but it seems that he has died. And so her brothers, probably her full brothers, are in charge of the family. Now, if she was a little bit embarrassed by the kind of crazy actions of her young man in love, but at the same time, I'm sure she's flattered. She's excited that he loves her so much. Well, her brothers, they're probably embarrassed, but they're not flattered. So they don't have that part of it. They just have the embarrassment part. This crazy young man who's engaged, who's betrothed to their sister. Now realize that at this point, the betrothal has already taken place, so the young man's father has already paid their father the bridal price. The bridal price has already come in, and they've already received the money they're going to get for marrying their sister to this young man. So what's left now? Well, what's left is that when she gets married, they're going to have to pay her a dowry, give her money to help set her and her young man up in their family business. And that's going to mean money out of their pockets. So the money that they're going to get for this marriage has already come in, and all that's happening now is that money is going to go out to help set her and her husband up. So there's really no benefit for them in them getting married. Plus, I think they probably fear scandal. I mean, if their little sister is to go off gallivanting around the countryside with her young lover, not chaperoned, I mean, tongues will wag. What will people think? What will they say? They can't let this happen. So they step in, like I said, maybe out of embarrassment and also out of concern for their reputation. They step in and they say, no way. Verse 15, catch us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. So they say, you can't go off and spend the day with your beloved shepherd because you have work to do. You need to go out in our vineyards because there are foxes that are spoiling our grape blossoms. And so we need you to catch foxes in our vineyard. Now think about this. If you were this young woman, which would you rather spend your day doing? Running around a vineyard trying to catch foxes? Or spend the day with your beloved? Well, I don't think I have to tell you which one you would probably prefer if you're a young woman in love. Not to mention, how easy a job can it be to catch foxes in a vineyard? I mean, imagine they're running around setting traps and doing who knows what to try to catch these foxes. Talk about an unpleasant job. But her brothers are in charge, and that's what they say she has to do. So we come to verse 16, and we imagine her. She's heading out to the vineyards to catch these foxes. And her beloved shepherd has to go away. Her brothers won't let her spend the day with him. So we imagine, if we imagine this is a musical play, we imagine kind of sad, forlorn music playing now. And like I said, if she's acting it out, she's walking out with her head bowed, forlornly, to go and catch foxes in the vineyard, rather than being able to spend the day with her beloved. But verse 16, she says, "My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feeds his flock among the lilies." So she says, even though I have to spend the day in the vineyard, she says, and even though my brothers are kind of getting in the way of us spending time together, still there's nothing they can do about it. Why? Because we're legally bound. We've been betrothed. We've gone through the ceremony. So my beloved belongs to me, and I belong to him. And my brothers might oppose our getting together, but there's nothing they can do about that. We're going to be married. There's nothing they can do about it. So she comforts herself with that. And then she says, he's off feeding his flock among the lilies. I imagine him there. Wish I am with him, but I imagine him there. And that helps me keep going. Then verse 17. It seems that she sends word after him. She says, "Until the day breaks and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountains of Bether." So this seems to be sending word to her shepherd. And basically saying, tonight, before the day breaks and the shadows flee. So tonight, well, it's still dark. Well, work can't be done in the vineyards or out on the fields with the sheep. She says, then come, turn, my beloved. Come back to me, in other words. Turn around and come back to me and be like a gazelle or a young stag. Be like an antelope or a deer to come back to me. So she basically sets up a date for them that night. Says, come back and meet me at night. My brothers can't send me to work then. So come, leaping to me like an antelope or a stag on the mountains of Bether. Bether means separation. So come back, jumping and skipping across those mountains that separate us to me, and we'll be together tonight. So as we get to the start of chapter 3, now we have their date that night. Verse 1. By night on my bed, I sought the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. So she's waiting for him to come. Now remember that our translators who are translating the Song of Solomon are not exactly understanding the story. And so they're trying to translate everything as romantically as possible. And to them, waiting for your beloved on your bed sounds more romantic than waiting for him on your couch. But really, this word should be translated couch. She's waiting for him to come to basically take her on a date. She's not waiting for him to come to her bed, because that wouldn't be appropriate for a betrothed couple. But it's that night. Her hard work in the vineyards is over, and you'd think she'd be tired and want to go to bed, but no, she's excited because the one she loves is coming to her. So she's waiting for him on her couch. So she sought him, but she didn't find him. She's waiting and waiting for this one whom she loves. Hebrew actually says who her soul loves, and soul is the emotions and the desires. Her emotions, her desires are all toward him. She's looking for him to come for their date, but he doesn't come. She stood up. Now, I would wonder, because, of course, her shepherd wants to be with her as much as she wants to be with him. So I would imagine perhaps her brothers had somehow managed to foil this intended meeting. Maybe they had waylaid her messenger and stopped him from delivering the message. Or maybe, as her shepherd was trying to come to her, they had intercepted him and said, no, you can't. We won't let you. We won't let you see her. Go away. But however it had happened, she's waiting for him to come. And he stands her up. I think he can't help it, but he stands her up. She doesn't come. But this young lady is not about to take no for an answer. Verse 2, I will rise now, I said, and go about the city. In the streets and in the squares, I will seek the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. So when he doesn't come, she says, I'm not going to stay here waiting for him. I'm going to get up. I'm going to go into action. I'm going to go around the city. I'm going to go through the streets. I'm going to go through the squares, and I'm going to look for the one I love. So she does that. She gets up, goes around looking for him. She searches the streets and the broadways and still can't find him. Now this shows us the complete safety that existed at Israel at that time. Now this was the time of Solomon, and really this was Israel's golden age. David, through war, had won peace for Israel from all the national enemies that were around them. And Solomon had maintained that peace mostly by marrying all their princesses. So now he was related to all the royal family, so he maintained the peace that way. But Israel was at peace. And they were genuinely following God, serving him at this time. So morality was at an all-time high in Israel. And therefore safety was as well. So a young woman could go out at night and wander the streets of the city and the squares and not be afraid. Well, in case that sounds realistic to us, remember that just 100 years ago in our own country, a young woman like this could have gone out and wandered the streets of New York and been completely safe, never been molested. Well, no young lady better do that now. But 100 years ago, she could and never even think about danger. Well, that's the way it was in Israel at this time. It was safety. It was security as they were following the Lord. Verse 3, the watchmen who go about the city found me. I said, have you seen the one I love? So there are watchmen going about the city, but I would suspect they're as much ceremonial as anything else. They're keeping watch on the city at night. Remember, Solomon at this time made shields to go in the temple, but he made them out of gold. Well, if you're really going into battle, are you going to really want a golden shield? No, gold is too soft. You don't want a shield made out of gold. So these were ceremonial shields more than useful ones. So Israel was at peace at this time, and these watchmen are probably as much to help in cases like this as they are to actually protect anyone. But she finds the watchman, and here's something interesting. Usually not much is going on in the city at night. So they say, what are you doing out here, a young lady, wandering around the city at night? Well, she asks them, have you seen the one I love? Well, I don't know if they had or not. Maybe they had, because she finds him pretty quick. Verse 4, scarcely had I passed by them when I found the one I love. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him to the house of my mother and into the chamber of her who conceived me. So she scarcely left these watchmen when she does find the one she loves. She finds her beloved shepherd. Now she holds on to him and wouldn't let him go. Maybe he says, well, we really can't get together, dear, because your brothers say we can't. They won't let us. But she won't take no for an answer. Like I said, she grabs him. She says, no, I'm not going to let you go. I held on to him, she says, until I had brought him to the house of my mother and into the chamber of her who conceived me. Now, we talked about that her father was dead, but her mother is still alive. And so at this point, she does what? She makes her mother her accomplice. Now, I think she knows if there's one place her brothers will never go, will never intrude, it's in her mother's chamber. These brothers are worried about scandal. Well, they're never going to go into their mother's chamber. Certainly not if she's their stepmother. I would suspect she is their mother. And they are full brothers and sisters, not half. But anyway, they would not go into their mother's chamber. So she goes in there knowing they won't be interrupted. But then also notice she makes her mother her chaperone. We talked about her brothers cared about their reputation. Well, she does as well. She may be in love, but she still cares about purity. And she's not willing to be in a compromising situation alone with her beloved at night. And we don't worry about that so much today. Young people want to go off into dark places alone at night. And their parents say, oh, sure, here are the car keys, have a good time. And then we wonder why young people have such trouble being moral, maintaining purity. Well, that's not typically the way it was back then. They were much more concerned that a young lady never be alone with a young man. They generally didn't allow that. And this young lady is concerned with that herself. She's not anxious to sneak off with her man the first chance she gets. She wants a chaperone. She wants to be able to maintain a reputation. Well, that's a good lesson for young people and even not so young people today as well. Then verse 5 ends Act 2, and we're back in Jerusalem, and she finishes her story. She says, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the does of the field, do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases. So she's told this story to show them how much she loves her shepherd. And now she charges these court ladies again not to try to stir up her passions for Solomon, because her love isn't pleased. We stirred up for him. Her love is pleased to wait for her shepherd boy. And that ends Act 2. So we see that the Song of Solomon presents to us a picture of the kind of love that God always intended between a man and a woman. This young girl is faithful to her love and not interested in a better offer from Solomon. Well, if only Israel had been as faithful to their God as this young woman was to her shepherd and not accept the quote-unquote better offers of the other gods who said, oh, you worship me and I'll make your crops be good. Oh, you worship me and I'll make you succeed in war. And they listened, and they weren't faithful to their God. Now, this young couple does not allow opposition to their meeting to push them into doing things the wrong way, getting together in secret, and maybe getting in a compromising situation. No, even though they want to be together, they are interested in purity, in their reputation, and in doing the right thing. Well, these are good lessons that young people, and really all people in our society, could learn. We should all be concerned with righteousness. Well, there are some great lessons here in the Song of Solomon for all of us, aren't there?
This story shows the kind of love that God intended between a man and a woman, and the kind of love that God had for Israel, and how Israel often would allow a love for the things of this world to sidetrack her from the love and devotion that they should have had for God. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on the courtship. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series in the book of the Song of Solomon with The Return of Solomon. Thank you for joining us today. We trust that you are learning that the more we study God's Word, the more we can know God. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible Studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org. I'm your host, Bob Juneau, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.